Press the button.
Hit the button.
We're not afraid of you.
Show me the money.
We're ready for that button. I'm Molly Wood. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense. That's what we do. That is our mission. It is our one job. And if I don't mind saying so, we're awesome at it sometimes.
So most of the time, I think we do pretty well. I'm Kai Rizal. Yep. Thanks for joining us on this Thursday. I guess it will be determined in the course of the next 15 minutes how hollowed out it might be. Going in, I'm not feeling too bad. But it sounds to me like I say that every Thursday. And then by the end, there's some emotional trough that I pass through to the end of this podcast.
I think we'll just call it Roller Coaster Thursday. I'm going in strong now. I'm definitely going in strong. Spring is here. Jabs are happening. Like it's. I feel like there's an awakening. It feels like there's like conversations that I have dropped for a year or have been dropped by the other party for a year are just now restarting. Like we're sort of like, oh, hey, I know I left you hanging for a whole entire year, but let's resume. Yeah, it just feels you can feel a little bit of a shift in the air. So we'll do some news. We'll make me smile. We'll see where we land with respect to ourselves.
Excellent. You hit it.
Atlanta Dairy Queen, speaking of shells. Okay. I have three links in here for two stories because I couldn't totally decide. One is kind of just a follow-up on our ongoing conversation in which, you know, corporate America is the fourth branch. And what has been happening in Georgia is sort of yet another example of a case where people are turning to companies to try to have a stronger say in lawmaking. And then government is pushing back hard against companies who are trying to have a stronger say in lawmaking. And it's also a good reminder that companies are not your friend. So what's happening, of course, is that Georgia passed this voter suppression bill that is strong and rooted in, of course, the untruth. So companies were weirdly sort of slow. The companies that are based in Georgia, Coca-Cola, Delta, and a couple at Home Depot, were a little slow to say very much about this until it passed. And it was clear that it was very unpopular. And now they're blasting it, which people are frustrated about, right? Because they're like, it's not credible that you didn't know what was in this bill.
Where you've been, right?
But now what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Right. Like so much press. I mean, So that's not that credible. Now they're blasting it. And what's so interesting is that, Delta's CEO, Ed Bastian, called it unacceptable. And he was like, this is an absolutely terrible thing. But what's so interesting is that Georgia, which you could argue is almost just like backed into a corner at this point where they have to go all in on this crazy voter suppression plan that they have. With 45 minutes left in the legislative session yesterday, Sherrilyn Ifill tweeted this, Georgia Republicans were considering adding a bill to tax Delta in retaliation for the company speaking out against the voter suppression bill, which to me speaks of an escalation.
It's technically speaking, it's getting rid of a tax break on jet fuel. But the upshot is that Delta would have to pay more because their CEO came out in opposition to this law. It's kind of wild.
I mean, it really is. Once you get an escalation like that, it's sort of like on the one hand, everybody feels like this is the game and they understand how the game goes, right? Companies, to keep their customers happy, speak out against things that are unpopular, but they don't really do that much about it. Maybe they take some, we have seen some real actions where companies pull out or don't have an all-star game or, you know, some version of an actual economic consequence, a sanction, if you will, because companies are apparently now acting like little government actors. And it's unclear whether that's going to happen at this point. But if you start to have an escalation like this, where there are like retaliatory laws being considered as a result of this speech, it is. Amy Webb, our futurist who we have all the time, pointed out that we really are in uncharted territory right now with respect to sort of like companies and their pseudo-governmental status and the way that we as Americans particularly look to them to solve our problems when government does not or makes it worse. Yeah.
Yeah. And we look misguidedly to companies to save us, right? The other part of this that's so interesting, and this is veering into the political, but these are conservative lawmakers, right? Conservatives with some air quotes, using the power of the state to discipline a company. And that's traditionally not a conservative political viewpoint. So it's very interesting.
On the one hand, it's hard to sort of be saying, you know, tech companies are censoring our speech, but we're going to censor the speech of companies with policy. Yeah. I mean, it's just setting up. And I think we have to keep saying this, even though we just said it twice. It is a very double-edged sword. Like, we don't want necessarily, ideally, we have a functioning government that is representative of who voters chose fairly and freely and with a minimum of interference. Mm-hmm. We don't want unelected capitalists making policy in response to like our outrage. That is not ideal. But I think it's gonna only continue, and it's super interesting.
It's coming. Yeah.
Turns out I chose. That's the only story I'm into.
You chose? Okay. All right, fair enough. It's a really good story. Mine is kind of a mélange. It's a little bit of timeline. It's a little bit of a this is in the air. It's a little bit of a, oh, God, we have to keep talking about this. So Biden's out with his infrastructure plan. He wants to raise taxes on companies from 21% to 28%, rolling back a part of but not the entirety of the Trump 2017 tax cuts, right? It was corporate taxes were 35%. They were cut to 21%. And functionally what happens is a lot of companies use a lot of loopholes and a lot of tax strategies to get their effective rate well below 21% already. So I just want to put on the table that there is going to be a lot of conversation in the next, I'm going to say like 4 months over corporate taxes in this economy, right? I mean, Biden wants to raise taxes on people making over $400,000 a year. That's actually pretty popular with most Americans. That's fine. Not popular with the Republicans in Congress, so that's going to be the fight, but it's going to pass through reconciliation. One of the really big fights we're going to see is the corporate tax rate, and it's going to come down to a fight over, oh, it takes away jobs, and it's going to stifle the economy, and the Dow's going to tank, and all that jazz. So just be on the watch for what's really going on in this conversation, which is companies fighting back against a lot of the loopholes and the devices they use to get their effective tax rate lower than the published tax rate to be that's going to be imposed anyway. And I just want you to be alert to that. Item number one. Item number two, Nancy Pelosi says she's going to get this done, the infrastructure bill done by the 4th of July, which is far away, but really soon. That's not going to happen. Huh. And so it's going to run into the fall, right? Well, it's not going to happen because she's got dissent within her caucus in the House. There's the Senate and reconciliation to deal with after that, and it's just going to be super messy. And here's why I mentioned the timeline. Also coming up at the end of the fiscal, which is September 30th, is number one, government funding, okay? And that's always a stupid battle. Mm-hmm. And number two, the debt limit, which is an even stupider battle.
Okay.
And that's going to run smack into the infrastructure plan, the human capital plan, the tax plan, all of this stuff. So we're in for a really kludgy 6 months, and I just want to make sure everybody is paying attention as this Michigas swirls around us. That's what I got.
It's interesting because I feel like what you're saying is pay attention, you mean follow the money.
Yes, I do. Yes,
and who
that's
doesn't
exactly
want
right.
to have to give any
yes,
up?
Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Absolutely.
That's exactly right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting too, right? Yeah, go ahead. You go with Jennifer Rubin. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, yeah, she had a really interesting piece today about how the Business Roundtable, which has spent who knows how long over the last few years in particular, striking a kinder, gentler tone about stakeholder capitalism and working for all of the people and not just the few, and who then, you know, most of whose members, A, used their tax cuts for buybacks so that none of it trickled down. And then now B are saying it will ruin democracy and capitalism if you raise this tax rate that we don't even pay anyway, because see also the tax gap. Even though, like, where do you think your trucks drive if you're Walmart and you've got fulfillment centers? Like, on these roads that are crumbling? I mean, how does this not help everyone? And so it is, so she referred to her words were stunning hypocrisy. Her words.
Yeah, right. And which is a very nifty little segue into the United States Chamber of Commerce, which has been getting all kinds of really nice press the last 18 months or so of the Trump administration. And with the Republican Party tending toward the big lie and conspiratorial and all of that, Chamber of Commerce has been saying, you know what? We have to uphold democracy, and we need to actually say things as they are, and this is not a cult of personality and all of that. And yesterday they came out and said, oh, my God, if you raise taxes on American companies, democracy will be over. It was wild. It was wild. Yep. It's so interesting how this switch is just flipping. So that's what's going on there. And watch this space, because there's more of this coming. Yeah.
Money. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Ooh, I feel a little bit of hollowing happening. I think it's time for Make Me Smile. Yeah.
Okay, I'm just going to say we found the guy driving the backhoe that was getting the ship out of the Suez Canal. A newspaper website in Cairo called The Seventh Day has an interview with Abdullah Ta'alat Abdel Gawad, known as Abdullah Shahata, right? He's the driver. This is quoting the paper via Google Translate. The driver of the most famous rig in the Battle of the Suez Canal Authority to float the giant Panamanian container ship ever given. He said he was happy to participate. He's just married for a year. He's waiting for a baby. So he really is happy for the job he has at the Suez Canal. Yeah, it was just great. It was great. And it's this dude driving this backhoe. Yeah, it was great.
What did we decide it's called? A wheeled. Uh-oh, we need to get this right for that three-year-old. We can't help us, Donna. Yeah. What is it? It's a wheeled something something. We will know shortly. And he, by the way, could not be more adorable and should also be set for life. Hook him up.
Yeah. So how about that? How about that? And there's a picture of him standing near the thing. And he said, wait, there's one great quote.
And he's got his flippies. I love him.
Abdullah confirmed that the moment of the success of the flotation of the ship was one of the most happiest moments of his life, because the success of the flotation is a success for all of Egypt, for the speed of the float in a time of 6 days, although experts confirmed it took more time than that, indicating that the joy of the world in floating the ship was a reward for the workers for their great efforts. Come on. I mean, a little bit of that is Google Translate, but come on. How great is that? Isn't that great?
I love it. Yeah. The pride, the wheel loader. Thank you, Donna. And she says, but Marissa Cabrera is the expert here because she fact-checked it for us. And so I would like to apologize to the three-year-old when I was like, is it a tract loader? No. Marissa checked it before we put it on the air. It's a tract. It's a wheeled loader. This is amazing. I love it. I love it. I'm so happy the boat keeps giving.
Right.
This is, okay, this is just the one thing that literally made me laugh out loud today, so I'm going to do it, even though it's a little inside baseball, but it still is worth some explaining, because there is, in many cities in America right now, particularly San Francisco and New York, there's the narrative about everyone who's leaving them, right? These cities are over. Mm-hmm. The pandemic has ruined them. They already had pre-existing problems. Forget it. Everyone's out of here. And some venture capitalists have been loudly quitting San Francisco for a couple of other cities. And Miami is one of them. Austin is the other. And lately, Peter Thiel went to Miami. But what is hilarious is how much they keep talking about it. And then this, so much, right? Everybody's got to come. It's a thing. So the deputy business editor at the Los Angeles Times, Jeff Berkovici, who has his pronouncer in his Twitter bio, which is amazing.
That is brilliant.
Because otherwise I would have been like, Berkovici, you know. Right. Nope, Berkovici. Yeah, Berkovici tweeted, and this made me laugh so hard, if a waiter were pushing a fish entree as hard as certain VCs are pushing a certain city, I would expect the fish was 3 days past its prime. If a swinger friend was blasting out constant texts like, this orgy is amazing, get down here right away, tell everyone you know, I would assume there were three people there and no one brought drugs.
And no one brought drugs.
I don't know. It made me laugh so hard, because nobody is as apparently proud of their city as the people who have just moved to Miami to escape San Francisco. Just go quietly. Great. Good for you. No one needs to know. Goodbye.
Yeah.
It's hysterical.
See you later.
The fish thing. Well done. Right. Well done, Jeff.
There we go.
And that's it.
Okay. And I believe there we go. We are done. Not really all that hollowed out. Maybe a little bit. Not too terribly. Yeah. Back tomorrow. Economics on Tap. Yeah, what? Go.
There, yes? I'm sorry. There is some reassurance in the fact that some things never change.
Which would
capitalism
be
going to capitalism.
Oh, capitalism going to capitalism.
Company's going to company.
That was the theme of the show today. Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
For sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, totally. Company's going to company. Capitalism going to capitalism. That's for sure. Brilliant. Mm-hmm. Okay, back tomorrow. Economics on Tap. YouTube live stream, 3:30 our time, 6:30 for all y'all on the East Coast and points in between, you know, figure it out. Public service announcement here. Molly and I are out next week. Kimberly Adams is in with a rotating cast of Marketplace reporters. And that's where we are.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Going to mix them up. All right. And then something, something bulldozer and then a wheel loader. All right. We're not trying to be accurate about construction machines anymore.
No, we're done. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner does production stuff for us. Edgar Phillips writes our newsletters. Also, the Make Me Smart skill on your smart devices.
I'm going to call them all Tonka trucks. That's my new plan. That guy drives that one Tonka truck. Okay. Today's program was engineered by Ben Tolliday, who also composed our theme music with Daniel Ramirez because they are so talented. Our senior producer is Donna Tam, who's just like, I don't even know why I try with these two. The executive director of On Demand, also on vacation right now, Satara Nieves. We can do whatever we want.
And speaking of which, Donna's off tomorrow and Bridget's in and in charge. So who knows what's going to happen?
It's going to be a party.
Can you guys hear that bee buzzing?
No.
Listen. Mm. Do you hear that? There's a bee trapped on the window.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.